Hello?
Hello.
Hey, people are still joining here.
So let's wait 1 or 2 minutes more for people to join. That wasn't my dog.
It wasn't mine either, but he lives here.
So it's 4 minutes past. Maybe we should try to get started. First thing is to find a volunteering scribe.
Colin here. I was volunteered earlier, so I'm game with that.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
And I volunteered to give Colin a break. This is Dan. When he needs one, so the two of us can trade off. As necessary.
That's perfect. Unless someone has any objection to the proposed agenda, the next item would be to approve the minutes of last meeting.
I'll just give a quick reminder that I'm recording the call for minutes past. For minutes taking as well. So just so you know, you're being recorded if you speak up.
Is there anyone that is not okay with approving those minutes? Silence was the response, so let's record them as approved. Looking further on in the agenda, the way we are proposing this to be run now is that first will Jan-Ivar talk roughly 20 minutes about his proposal to introduce promises now. Then Justin will have about 10 minutes to talk about argue why we should do it later and not right now, followed by an scheduled impact discussion, a short one, and then have some 30 minutes for discussion, and finally have a decision. And I think Harald has sent out the proposed way we do the consensus calls. So next up is actually you, Jan-Ivar, but you had a lot of slides. I don't think you will have time to run all of them.
Point of order, is Justin on the call yet?
Sorry?
I see, is Justin on?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay, good.
I hope to not dwell too long on all the slides, so I think I should be able to hit my main points.
Great.
Okay, should I say?
Yeah, someone should post a link to the slides into the IRC. Do you have it handy, Jan-Ivar?
If someone has it, that'd be great. Please post, otherwise I'll look for them.
I'll look and you start talking then.
Great. Thank you. I see them. All right. So this is a proposal to modernize GUM and why we shouldn't wait to try to do this later. But I have to apologize. I have a cold. So if you can't understand what I'm saying, please let me know. Please stop me. So slide two. I post some reading prep for this presentation. I'm going to use JavaScript arrow functions to make the examples briefer. And my apologies, I know not everyone perhaps understands what they are, but it's literally an arrow-looking operator instead of the function keyword, which is part of ES6 JavaScript. And the reason is just because with callbacks and promises, a lot of functions are being bandied around. So this briefer syntax is hopefully helpful to at least fit things on my slides. If they're confusing, please don't hesitate to ask. But for our purposes, literally replacing that operator with a function keyword is all you need. So slide three. Any questions on that? So slide three, which is why we're here, is about promises. And promises is a powerful standardized pattern for asynchronous behavior. It gives you safe error handling. And it also gives you very clean spec prose. And I've included some links. Hopefully, several of you have taken the opportunity to look at this since Monday. But the first link is a good explanation of the immediate benefits. It's also fully WebIDL supported, which is extremely handy for errors. And the third link is an excellent introduction and guide. It also includes standard phrases and prose for spec writers to make specs easier to read. And finally, there's a that's the quintessential spec for this, or ES6. To put it, to quote the third guide again, promises is a unified primitive for asynchronicity. That's a quote from the third link guide, the promise guide, which was written by Dominic Denicola from Google. And it's also, it's a well worth read. Next slide four. So my main argument here, why we should do this now, is that we're behind the times. The paradigm shift has already happened, and that anything new in the last year that has any kind of asynchronous values use promises. And in fact, ES6 introduces this quintessential promise, specifically so that APIs can return them. And that's APIs like ours, like GUM, image capture, pair connection, and RTP center. Promises have existed in libraries for many years, but this is the quintessential version that is now part of the language and opens up that we can actually do this. So you see here the screen orientation stack, push API, HTML, create image, bitmap, and service workers, which is all about doing things asynchronously. So WebRTC is the main callback holdout, and we'll see why this is a problem on the next slide five. Why use promises? A big reason, most people focus on the convenience. So you can chain these things and you can read them synchronously. And that was true for promises A. What's new in promises A plus is actually that they solve a big problem with error handling. And so you saw some code two slides ago on the promises slide that is a foo function that takes a success and failure callback. That's using those arrows function again, but if you can't read them, just it says function result. That's the success callback, and it just logs the string saying it succeeded. Now, and then the second line is how that would look with promises. But let's look at the first line. Well, a log function doesn't really fail, but in slides like this, a log function is a standing bit for any function that can do something. So it's fair to ask, what if log fails? Well, currently, that will go straight to your web console, and the program is none the wiser, and things will just stop. So how to solve this? Well, you could try to pass in your failure object, your failure handler, at the end, into the log function or the do something function, or you could put a try catch around the whole thing and try to call your failure callback. Now that's a little odd to call your failure callback, because now you have your success callback calling your failure callback, and earlier people might be surprised by that, because it's supposed to call one or the other. So promises solve this, of course, in that the second line you says the foo function returns a promise, and then you can immediately do a then function on that promise and put your success and failure callbacks there. What's subtle here is that the then function actually takes two parameters. You can provide both a success callback and a failure callback, but you can also omit any of them, which is very useful. And in fact, here I'm not putting in a failure callback specifically to pair it up with my success callback, because I don't care. I really want this to bubble all the way to the end, and I want to catch any failure at the very end. So that's why I have the catch function, which is really just an alias for then passing in null comma failure. So it's useful syntax. And it also helps write chains where you don't forget to put catch at the end, which would be very bad. But here, if log throws, it's actually caught by this final catch statement and sent to the failure callback that the application provided. Works really great. Now, slide 6, let's compare to our error handling. So here we have the old navigator get user media with a success function and a failure function. So the success function takes a stream and does something, and then it gets some tracks and calls peer connection grade offer. Great. So what if do something throws here, progress ends, but it's uncaught? And there's really no way to know that. And the failure callback never hears of it, so the program stalls. And here's the same disconnect between synchronous errors, which are exceptions, and asynchronous errors. Both halt the progress, but the former is uncaught and only the latter is propagated out. Now sure, our working group says, don't do that. We said that several months ago. But it's still a giant foot gun for users. And I would also say that we said promises aren't ready yet a year ago. So we can change our minds. And several of us already have, which is why we're here. So slide 7. So this is the main problem, I think, going out without promises gives us, is that our error handling is fundamentally broken. And I think our error handling in our current API is fraught with enough peril and should not be exposed to anyone. And adding promises fixes this.
This is sort of a baffling argument, in that we have like lots of successful applications are already built from this API, Anivar. So I mean, like, you know, it's just raw.
Well, I hope the logic bears out that, you know, for a WebRTC demo, you don't really need this level of error.
I'm trying to remember, isn't there some big application that Google uses built on this thing? I'm trying to remember the name. Hangout, something like that?
Sure. I mean, you can. I think that in order for this to work, you're going to get bitten at some point, and you're going to get bugs. So I'm not arguing that people aren't making do.
So wait, your argument is that software will have bugs? Wow. So really, promises are really an amazing technology. They stop bugs.
You could say this is an argument that I think if you look at antique languages that don't have exceptions, for instance, then you need a lot of error-prone boilerplate in order to get your code to work. And that leads to worse code and leads to slower release of features. So it's better that we know better now. I mean, a year ago, we said this wasn't ready, but now we know better.
I'm just trying to sort of qualify your argument here, which is this is not like a panacea. At best, it's a modest improvement. So, like, the suggestion that, like, the world will end if we don't make this change is just, like, wrong.
The world has agreed what the future pattern is to deal with asynchronicity.
The world has agreed for the next year or two on these things going in and out of fashion anymore.
Well, Well, we said that a year ago, and things have only...
And I said a year or two, so I'm sorry, is this like evidence against?
Well, unfortunately, my 20 minutes are not long enough to convince why promises are a worthy thing, but there's a lot of links that I provided that shows that mostly the web community agrees that it is. So I don't think there's enough time here to argue that point. I mean, we should just stop here then. But let me... I think it would be worthwhile for me to continue here, then we can have these decisions at the end.
Janabar, I just have a clarification question, mm-hmm. and it is just clarification.
Sure.
I just want to make sure I understand correctly that on slide 5, what you're saying is that the failure callback with promises catches not only a failure of foo, but a failure of the success callback on foo.
The way it's written, yes. And the reason is because the two lines, the before and after, are not totally symmetrical. Because the totally symmetrical thing would have been to pass in three callbacks, actually. A success callback, a failure callback, and then a final third catch anything else, a failed callback. But as you know, users are lazy. They're not going to do that. They're going to make a chain of everything they want to succeed, and then they want to catch any failure at the end. And that's also the correct thing to do if you have steps where the next step always relies on the previous step to have succeeded.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying the semantics of the catch failure in this case.
Yes, so you can make a chain, and you can pass in an error handler at any point, but the powerful thing with promises is that you can also omit them at any point. And then you get error bubbling that's very symmetrical, very analogous to how throw errors or exceptions are thrown in synchronous code. So that's really the most, if promises are confusing, and it's confusing because if you Google promises, there are a lot of libraries out there, and it's really confusing what the quintessential version is. But the analogy is really with synchronous code. You want to be able to have steps that run in sequence, and for any step to throw an exception or basically say, oh, we can't proceed, and have that bubble up so that someone can catch it. And then that person catching it is either all the way out and says, well, everything failed, or some code in the middle can say, well, I can handle this failure, and I'm going to deal with it here, and I'm going to proceed either through a plan B or something else so that my caller doesn't hear about it. So it's pretty clean and powerful. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it was really just a clarification on the semantics in this particular case, and that is the whole point that you're making.
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
So, sure. So in order for things to work somewhat like that in our code, users must, in effect, vigilantly try to catch everything they do in case it throws an error.
Anyway, don't well-written applications have to do that anyway? Because if you don't catch your exceptions, you know, they bubble up and they cause the program to stop working.
With promises, there really is no difference between synchronous and asynchronous errors in that they're different, but they're handled the same way, which is very nice because you don't have to both do a try catch and a promise catch. You just need the promise catch. In fact, this goes as deep as WebIDL that actually has special rules that if it's a promise, if a function returns a promise, no throwing is okay, not even argument validation. So WebIDL takes care of that. In other words, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Yeah. So, Harald, so WebIDL actually changes the semantics of parameter passing based on the return value of the function?
Yes, because there's an inherent, because it's an asynchronous function and it recognizes that. And then that way all errors, including argument checking, is returned through the promise. So this is powerful stuff that we should be using.
This is powerful stuff. I fully agree with that. Thank you.
Sure. So the way it was. Yeah, so even if the user try catches everything, like they do in this code I'm showing on slide 7, the question is, well, now I've caught the error, but I still don't have a way to bubble it up. And, you know, I could call the one failure function I have. It looks like the right one, but it's actually not the right one in many cases, because only really the end user of, only really the application user is the right person to say whether you should admit an error callback or not. Any kind of library should be very clean and only call the success or the failure callback, or this gets really messy. Anyway, so to continue here, not using my time, the failure function here, this is a minor problem, I might as well mention it, is that it, failure callback wants to also tolerate non-medium errors, which is a small problem on slide 8. I don't want to spend too much time with it. A medium error really is incompatible with promises right now, but it's easy to fix. It should be inherited from DOM exception, not DOM error, because the spec says, or the guide says, that's Dominic's guide again, says promise rejection reasons should always be instances of the XML script error type, just like synchronously thrown exceptions should be instances of that type. In particular, for DOM, that means we should never use DOM error, but instead DOM exception, which per WebIDL extends error. So slide 9. So here's what the pull request is actually proposing. There are three functions. There's get user media, which now the new one is on media devices, get user media. So the proposal is to, since that is pretty new, the idea is that most people haven't implemented that one yet. At least, relatively speaking, not nearly as many as are still using the old get user media on Navigator. So the idea is that the new one, media devices get user media, returns a promise, so you can write code like this. Media devices get user media constraints, then you get a stream, and then you can also pass in a failure callback, but most people will just do a final failure callback at the very end. And there will be a discouraged legacy get user media with callbacks intact on Navigator, where you can call the old callbacks. Slide 10, similarly for apply constraints, which is Firefox does not implement. I can't speak for others, but I don't think anyone is implementing apply constraints yet. So it's not too late to change that one, hopefully. Same thing here. Apply constraints, frame rate minimum 60, and then you put in success and failure. And this actually underscores, this slide shows the difference. I'm actually passing in two arguments to them here. There's a callback that says yeah, and there's another one that says nope, where I know specifically explicitly that whether the answer was yes or no to that question. And that's separate from the final catch, which says something else wrong happened, but I should at least catch it. Hopefully that's clear. The last one is enumerate devices, same thing here. In our spec, enumerate devices is actually not allowed to fail, which I thought was curious, since, you know, things can always fail. So this would be navigator media devices, enumerate devices, then devices. For each device, so this, you know, device, log device, device label. But you can only say device so many times. So maybe a better name for that would have been enumerate, since it's off an object that only is called media devices. But in any case, this was introduced June 16th. It's not yet implemented in Firefox. I hear that maybe Chrome implements it. I'm not sure. In any case, I'll show later how you can easily make a hybrid API. The browser's going to solve this backwards compatibility on their own. It doesn't have to impact the spec. But in any case, one option would be, since there's an opportunity here to maybe rename that, which might make a backwards compatible version easier. Now, so I only had one why so far, and that was error handling. The second why is you get standardized prose, which means the spec reads a lot better and is a lot cleaner, and that we can defer a lot of this asynchronous stuff to another spec, which means that we just say, when a numeric device is called, the UI must run the following steps. Let P be a new promise, run the following steps in parallel. Let result list be an empty list, resolve P with the result list. That means that's the success. And then step number 3 in the original sequence is to return P. Excuse me. So, and the indented part here is the part that's run in parallel. And it's really clear what behavior is expected from that. And the return value is, in this case, for numeric devices, a sequence of media device info. And that's also a nice with WebIDL, and it lets you specify, really only for documentation purposes, what the value of the promise when it succeeds is right there in the WebIDL spec. Slide 13.
Yanivar,
another why. Go ahead.
So what are you actually claiming is the benefit from the spec perspective? Because there seems to be an equivalent amount of text on both the left and the right.
Well, I'm presuming that the benefit is to get rid of the old callback API now, so that way we don't have to talk about it in the spec ever again. And that's, so it's clearly simpler to have one way to describe it than two ways.
Sure, okay.
And in addition, I would say it's better to not have to invent our own language. It's not home-rolled language like we have on the left here with callbacks. And we can refer to another spec about, well, what happens in query cases? We don't have to deal with any of that because it's already discussed at great length in the promise spec. And, you know, standards. It's good to use them. So, and the final why is that there really is no better time to get rid of callbacks, because whatever we decide here today, I'm confident WebRTC is going to be affected about which way it goes. This actually came up because GRE suggested using promises on the image capture spec, and already there was backlash about, well, we have to be consistent with callbacks now that we have them. And this is really what drove this to come to the surface again. You know, I don't want to speak for the chairs, but they must have had a reason for having this discussion now. So, and it's always also for the downers of promises, to put it that way. I mean, clearly, I'm convinced here. So it's really hard to prove that promises is going to be a lot simpler to use with just the media capture spec. To really appreciate its full glory, it comes in when you combine this with something, with other things that are asynchronous, like WebRTC. And I don't know, I want to spend too much here, but what you're looking at here, you can study later. There's pretty much two functions, dial and pickup, that each encompasses one peer connection in a local call. And it's unlike any other, I think, any other local loop test you've seen, in that these two peer connections are actually set up asynchronously or in parallel. And it uses a promise all at the very end to run the dial function and the pickup function, the promise chains really, run them in parallel. And at the very end, when both of them are finished, it prints out connected. And there's a single line of error handling in this whole example. Now, this is a complete local loop call. The only thing that's missing is on add stream and on ICE candidates. There are also other uses, so I encourage you to go and look at the posting I did in the WebRTC group on that. It also uses promises cleverly to handle ICE state and stuff. In fact, the signaling argument you see here relies on a promise for past local offer and a promise for stable state that you can just read so that when the local offer appears, then do this thing. And it has other advantages like that. So, interest of time, slide 14. So we have three degrees of backwards compatibility that we can invoke here. One is in specification. We should use that when the number of existing users are so widespread across multiple implementations that all future browsers must implement it as truth for all eternity. And we've decided that navigate user media, the well-known navigator, qualifies for that. Number two is implementation specific, where existing users are limited to early adopters. And early adopters are nice because they're quick to adapt again. Browsers continue its support to transitionally with web console warnings. And other browsers, importantly, are not required to adopt this. The spec is left clean. So this might be a good candidate for if there is a WebKit media devices and then your devices, I don't know. And the last one is basically, this is WebP prefix stuff, too bad. And you're all with us because when you prefix stuff, you kind of agreed to that this would happen. And that's really, so I show you the slide 15 is just a joke. It's the WebKit MozKit prefix action card, which technically gives us nothing, but psychologically gives us basically the choice that we're seeking here that, you know, we said we could break you, therefore we can break you. So slide 16. This is a backwards compatible polyfill. This is very basic. It doesn't really show you a production polyfill. That's not my intent here. I'm not showing anybody else either. But the idea is very simple. You have any kind of get user media function that has success and failure callbacks. it's so easy. You just call the one that returns the promise, and then you take the callback and stuff them into the then function of that callback, of that promise that's returned. The actual one for get user media and one for enumerate devices. And what's not clear here is that I should have maybe added to this slide. If you add one more line to each of these functions to return P, then you're also returning the promise. So then you have a perfect hybrid API that both takes callbacks, optional callbacks, and returns a promise. Now, this is an API that browsers can implement that gives you web console warnings telling you to hurry up and switch, but still works. And the reason it works is because then functions can be called multiple times on the same promise, and those functions are executed in the same order they were added. But my point here, and why I don't include web.io, is that because none of this needs to be in the spec. So I realize most people are concerned here about compatibility, but I don't think I don't have more slides on it because I don't think there really is a compatibility issue here. So if there maybe there's something we can clarify in questions. The final slide I have is reasons to do this now. Fix our broken error handling. I think the world will be better if we don't place yet another callback API when it's already late enough for us to know better. We get a clean, modern script language and the inevitability that in a year's time we'll regret not having done this now. And the proof of that is a year ago when we were in the same situation. Now, to be fair, there were better arguments then that this thing hadn't panned out yet, but now it clearly has. We can look at other specs that have this. And then the fourth is fan out that WebRTC is next. So what we decide here will impact that. And since we really want to remove something, not add something, unfortunately, the only time to do that is now. And anyways, this is something we can't accomplish later. And there's also decent backwards compatibility. I can take questions on that if there are questions. And we're still prefixed, so we can do the stuff now, we can't later. So with that, I can open it up for questions.
Okay, there seems to be no immediate questions or clarifying questions, and we have a longer block of time later to discuss that. So then I propose we move on to Justin's slides.
Okay, I'll paste the link here in the chat.
Thanks.
Okay, can everybody see that?
Works for me.
Okay, so moving on to slide two, point number one. Regardless of whether we're prefixed or not, we still need to support people who are using the existing API. Like, we've, you know, had this, you know, sort of prefix card out there for a long time, but the API has also been out there for a long time, and we're certainly not in a position where we're going to break people who are using, like, the prefix. There are polyfills that allow people to abstract themselves from this, and if we change the API signature, you know, we can't just say, hey, use the prefix polyfill, and, like, you know, your fault. We've been successful, and, like, you know, this is a consequence of our success, and you know, supporting, you know, the API that exists right now, I don't see as being super onerous. Moving on, point number two. WebRTC is by far not the only API that exists in the web platform that does not use promises that is asynchronous. There are some plans to retrofit other APIs or have successor APIs for other you know, APIs that don't support promises. But, you know, XHR, which is used, I'm sure, quite a bit more than WebRTC, has a far worse API and almost incomprehensible error handling semantics, yet people use it all the time. And I never really even hear people complain too much about it because there's abstractions and everything around it. So moving to the third point, because of the fact we need to support the current API, and there will be retrofits for other APIs, I think that it's very clear that we can add promises later to get user data. Now, I don't have anything against promises. I think that some of the terseness and, you know, simplicity that are, you know, not that they can achieve is quite nice to have. But the problem that I have is that everything takes time. And whether it's just making sure we cover all the corner cases or writing it down in the spec or implementing in the applications or shaking out the bugs, it will take time and it will delay things. So moving on to point number four, we need to finish the 1.0 spec for WebRTC and media capture. For media capture, you know, we're at the point where we can do the last call. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, well, moving on to point number five, given that adding promises will make finishing 1.0 take longer, is it worth it? I mean, I think it can't be argued that it will not make number four take longer. So the question becomes, will it be worth it? And so moving on to point number six, you know, we have to ask, well, will this make adoption of WebRTC 1.0 go faster? Will this actually be materially beneficial to media capture or WebRTC? And my general sort of feeling from talking to developers is that, you know, people who are writing WebRTC applications, like serious applications, like the API, you know, is kind of the least of their concerns. You know, standing up a cloud service, you know, dealing with media quality, you know, getting distribution, like these sort of issues are pressed issues for junior web developers, but people are writing, like, you know, hardcore applications, you know, they'll have, like, back-end servers written in C, which they have to do, like, all sorts of gymnastics to do error handling. And I think it's a very dubious proposition to say that promises will materially drive the adoption of WebRTC 1.0. So coming to my final point, number seven, because of the fact that we can add promises later, and that adding promises will make shipping 1.0 take longer, and shipping 1.0 take, you know, making 1.0 take longer, you know, isn't worth it given the upside that it would be bringing, why not just finish 1.0 now and add promises later in 1.1 and hope to still continue to evolve WebRTC in the future? And that's my argument.
Thank you, Justin. So, questions? Jan-Ivar, you're first.
Yeah, so there are multiple things I would challenge in that presentation. The one is that we would break people. And I think I already showed that we don't need to break people. It's totally simple and easy to make hybrid APIs that take the old way, give you a warning, and then work like the new way. So there's zero. It's a perfect transition period where you can get people over on the new thing and then warn them that this is going to change in a year or whatever the transition window is. So we don't need to break anyone. And it would also be, but none of this has to be mentioned in the spec because the spec just needs to preach a new way. And other point was on X8R, is I believe not in last call, so they don't have the options we have. The argument that this takes time, it was just a post on the list that because writing these wrappers were so simple, people could do that themselves, and we could leave the consumers to do that themselves. And at the same time, the argument is, it's so complicated, it'll take time to add into the spec. And while that seems a little hard for both of those to be possible, and I will argue that we're not scot-free on last call here, because there are problems with our errors, like the fact that our media stream error is not promise compatible. We'll have to fix that. We'll have to fix it, make sure it inherits some DOM exceptions. And what about all these corner cases? People are still left to encounter a lot of these. Most people are still left to encounter a lot of these corner cases, and they'll complain. And my final point about uncertainty, if we want to drive adoption of WebRTC, we're saying we're going to release a 1.0, but like, yeah, we're going to change it later, but go ahead and use it now. Well, most people are going to say, well, you saved 1.0, but we clearly hear that you're going to change it again. So that's going to lead to uncertainty that this isn't the final API. I think we're in a much better position here to come out strong, add promises, which I will go on record and say will not take very long time because, A, get user media is not a complicated API. And the all the wrinkles have already been ironed out in the promises. So I think we might actually save time compared to trying to fix some of these error handling problems ourselves by defining our own error handling objects that don't inherit from DOM exception, that it might actually save us time in the end. So that was my thought.
Okay. I'll give another cue here. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't think there's any particular contradiction between between saying that it's easy to write a PyFill and saying that it's difficult to rewrite the specification at the end of the day. Lots of things that are trivial to do in code that is temporary code or code that is being that does not need to be standardized that are difficult in standard contexts. I don't really see any contradiction between the two at all. I have to concur with Justin. I've tried a lot of people who use WebRTC, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody who's trying to write over CF complain about, like, the error handling style of the API. That's about, like, issue 933rd on people's, on the minds of people who are doing WebRTC. And, like, I say that the number one and number two things I hear are, why aren't you done? And, why don't you do this feature I actually want? And I assure you none of those features have been in any way enhanced by having a different error handling style. That seems far from obvious.
Well, we have three functions, get user media, enumerate devices, and apply constraints. And there's a pull request already to return a promise. And we're done.
Again, that seems far from obvious.
Well, the other way we could say our error handling functions have problems and need to be fixed so that we can even add promises. And I don't see a pull request for that. So that should take longer.
Okay, Justin, I guess you're next. Thank you.
Okay. Just responding to that last point, sure, I think we would want to update our error objects so that we could add promises later. But, we have iterated this spec a lot over the past 3 years. And, to say that we won't encounter any sort of, real-world sort of interactions with promises around get user media, and that this pull request that's outstanding will be the end of it. I'm a little bit dubious of that, and that's not to even talk about the actual implementation aspects. We'd actually have to go wire this up in the browsers and deal with what will surely be a bunch of additional implementation debugging and customer feedback cycle. We'll be at Eric's point of why aren't you guys done? That time when we will be done will be certainly pushed out if we go down this path. And that's why I'm arguing that, we can come revisit it later. As to, that'll make people not adopt WebRTC because they'll know something else is coming. The Osborne effect does not come into play there. APIs get added, revised every year. Android had 4,000 new APIs this year. That did not stop people from adopting Android because of the 4,000 new APIs that are going to come next year. I don't see that as having any real substance behind it. And on the breakage part, certainly we can preserve the compatibility. We can certainly preserve compatibility. I'm not saying that adding promises will break existing apps. I am saying though that we are going to be beholden to basically shipping implementations that support when we do support promises. Both promise versions and callback-based versions for quite some time. And since we already have to deal with that, it doesn't really matter when we add promises, whether we add them now or when we add them later. We have the luxury of doing that whenever it makes the most sense for their overall time frame of this working group. Either way, we need to keep sort of both mechanisms in our browsers. And, if we're trying to optimize for getting done sooner, I think we just add the second format later. Like I said, I have nothing against promises. I'm just trying to be very pragmatic about finishing 1.0 soon, and I don't see any reason why we can't finish it at promises.
Okay. Paul, you're next.
So the thing about the reason why does not get it from errors is that there has been no stable spec for errors for the last year. I think it error is now stable than in the ES6 spec, but the only difference that I have to the ES6 spec is a reference to a private directory at the Mozilla account. I'm not happy with the situation of having a spec that is supposed to go to last call depend normatively on something that doesn't, where the authoritative reference is in a private directory at some Mozilla account. I'm sure there's something some happy about there.
Right, so I think that's a moot point.
I think, yes. I am not happy with the fact that those specs exist. I don't dictate the choices made in other groups. I'll look at the links, though.
So, Ivan,
you're the queue. Yes, so Justin is right that we'll probably do the same thing for the next year, regardless of which way we go here. But right now represents a unique opportunity to get this right in the document. And I think that will have a huge impact in how quickly this is adopted and how little confusion there'll be compared to the other way. And, you know, mentioned other APIs, they're not in last call. They don't have this option. And as far as, I will go on record and saying I think the path is smoother with promises and without here. Just looking at the complexity, I'd much rather have another group to blame for this.
So, Yanivar, let me sort of play along with this for a little while. Say we adopt promises. Like, how long do you think it would be until Firefox had a stable version of Get User Media that real apps could build on and use promises?
Oh, thank you for asking. It's already available, and I already posted a link to the list where you can download a version of Firefox that supports this. And I haven't committed it. It's a patch that's in our system that I haven't committed yet because Mozilla would probably not like it until we've actually decided that this is the way to go.
I didn't ask when the first version that supported promises at all would be available. I meant when a version that would be fully debugged and like actually used by customers who have said that it works for them would be available. How long do you think that would actually take?
Well, the promises spec for the ES6 spec is from someone at Google, and I think both browsers already support promises just fine. So it's available in your library already, and it's just a question of using them, and they're very stable.
I just software. Like, things never work the way they are expected to. Like, I just am very dubious that things will just work out of the box the first time, and we will not push our dates at all by doing this.
Well, the implementation delays are also different from the spec delays. I mean, I think we have enough confidence here in the spec, because there are other specs already published, that if some implementer has trouble with their timeline, this should not, frankly, be relevant, I think. I mean, promises have arrived in specs already, and this is a spec we're talking about here.
Well, but apps don't run on specs. They run on implementations. And when people ask, when is 1.0 done, they're not really asking, when is the 1.0 spec going to be done? They're asking, when is like your implementation in your browser going to be fully stable?
Okay, but if we go to slide with the polyfill that I had in, where is it? Slide 16. It is very little to this. I mean, it's really taking callbacks and calling promise.then on the callbacks and returning that promise. I mean, I guarantee you it's not going to take you a lot of time. And it's not going to be error prone. And it's not going to need any debugging.
Like, I see that's what the polyfill does, but I'm saying that the actual, the actual work to make sure the stuff all fires properly, like, there have been numerous problems with, like, dispatching callbacks and making sure they're called from the right place in the event loop. So if you call some other function from the callback, that stuff all works properly. To make me at least very dubious that it's all going to work perfectly fine, like, the first time.
Well, I would argue that this is, in fact, the solution to all that.
It's not a solution to all that. Like, you still have to deal – like, this problem still exists in the underlying implementation. This is just a question of how they're dealt with at the inside of the language.
This doesn't really impact implementation. The downstream code of this is identical. I mean, all you have to do – this is really an API-level type of switch. The only thing that's different is how those callbacks are communicated back to the caller in the content. That doesn't really impact the underlying C++ implementation.
Okay. I mean, I think, I've made my point. I don't think that it's going to be, free. And I think that if it's not free, it's going to have some cost. And I don't think that cost is worth incurring right now. And if it, is so simple, like, we can add it so simply later.
Well, that goes back to the false choice again, though. That's I would argue it is simple, but then we don't get any of the benefits.
Then you are, we have a queue, so let's move on to
okay.
Yeah. I haven't tried to implement this. I give some credence to the notion that it will be relatively modestly simple to implement. On the other hand, we currently have an API which is we currently have an API which has had very extensive use, and so we know exactly how it behaves. And I think the next question is going to be, should we really be advancing the document when the only versions of it that anybody can actually use are running in alpha versions of Firefox and Chrome? So this seems like it's going to incur essentially a minimum 12 to 18 week delay in advancing the document, because, like, we have to have it actually fielded and tested, and verify we haven't screwed up. This is different from doing this on paper. I think also you have to think about the trickle impact on WebRTC. I mean, any of our slides are very clear. He wants to change WebRTC to conform to the same design idiom. And it's not clear to me that's not going to cause delay as well.
Yeah, the last part is out of scope for this group, though. But yes, I do want to change that as well.
That's for another call, really. Anne, you're next.
Okay. I want to clarify a few things. First of all, promises are shipping in, I think, all browsers now. They're stable. It's true that the ECMAScript 6 spec, the usable version, is hosted on a Mozilla server, since the official version is the PDF, and that's not very useful to read from on the web. But also, you can just reference IDL. You don't have to reference Tetra directly. Someone cited Android as shipping all the new APIs, but on the web, that's not really how it works. Like, once we then prefix this API and people start using it, sites will depend on it, and it will become increasingly harder to get people to to switch away. And I think that if we make a change now, it would actually be feasible for us to, at some point in the future, only support the single version of this API that returns promises, where we no longer have to support the callback. And that would seem like a better solution. It seems a bit weird to me that everyone agrees that we want to have promises, And we can even ship them in Firefox now. There is a build available. If you have a change to the spec, submit it. And we still need to unprefix anyway, so there will be like some amount of churn. And that seems like the best possible point to also change to promises so that we don't have to like do another change in the future and get more churn at that point. I don't really understand the resistance. I mean, there will be need, there's going to be library impact from this prefix change anyway, like might as well bite the bullet. It seems way better to do that now than to try to do it in two separate steps, first in prefix and then try to change to promises later.
Okay. Adam, next. Okay, so I spoke to you already, Anna.
All right, so unless, so this, going back to the back and forth between Yanivar and Justin a few minutes ago, what really stuck out to me is that everyone here on both sides of the issue seems to agree that these approaches are functionally isomorphic. I mean, Yanivar's slides include an example of how to adapt in one direction, and I sent some code to the email list that shows how to go to the other. And so what this means is that this really comes down to just being an aesthetic decision around what goes in this document. And at which, at that point, I have to agree with the sentiment that Justin has put forth and what Ecker said in IRC is, you know, shipping is a feature, and we've iterated on this an awful lot. It's taken a lot longer than most people thought it should, and I agree that putting this in here has potentially unintended consequences that are going to require additional polish in the spec, additional polish in the browsers, whereas we know that what we have now works. I also want to point out that Yanivar's argument this can be done in a backwards compatible way very much cuts both ways. I mean, we can do this in a subsequent specification, and it doesn't hurt any more than or any less than doing it now.
Okay. Geary, you're next.
Yeah, I just put it in the e-room. This is a question directly to Yanivar. You know, and if anybody wants my opinion, yeah, I'm in favor of a transition to promises. I chair the geolocation working group. I wish this had been around a few years ago, but you know, for that API as well. But, you know, leaving that aside, the proposal didn't mention all the event targets that are in the, that are currently in, the media capture and stream specification. And I was wondering I assume that any, you know, these functions can raise exceptions as well. I was wondering if those would also be adapted to promises.
Well, my answer would be that they are, well, first off, that's out of scope for this group. But yes, promises do make for good event targets some of the time, but not all the time. If it's an event that can be fired repeatedly, then event target is the best API for that. If it's something like our signaling state, which only ever, what's a simpler case? Maybe the track, maybe the media stream track.
You misunderstood the question. Look at the example. Like add track is a discrete function. Get track by ID is a discrete function. They just happen to be defined on the event target. So I was just wondering, wouldn't the proposal to go to promises extend to that as well? The event target wouldn't change. I mean, the event target in this case is media is a media stream object. But there are just functions that are defined on it. So that's all I'm asking.
Well, last I checked, add track is synchronous, so it would not apply here. Well, no, you wouldn't need promises.
Add track has been moving to asynchronous. Has to.
Well, if we're going to move it to asynchronous, yeah, then you want to use promises. But that shouldn't be you have a compatibility concern already. So it doesn't seem like any reason to introduce old-style callbacks. Is there? No, that's what we keep coming back to, is that there seems to be a notion among some that callbacks are just fine, and that this promises stuff will go away. And that's not true. I'm telling you all, this is going to be the new way that people do. It already is. And that's why I can say it so confidently, because look around. Look at other specs. I mean, we are a main holdout in new APIs in doing callbacks. And the time for callbacks are over because, to speak to what Adam said, what we have now does not work. It does not work in a lot of the corner cases of error handling. So it would be a mistake, I think, to foist that API on new users when we don't have to. XHR, it's too late for them, but it's not too late for us.
All right, okay. So I have a couple of observations to make. This has really been set up in quite an adversarial fashion. I don't know that I could have planned it any better, but I think that we're attacking this in a way that makes me actually feel quite uncomfortable. The second observation, which will probably make that actually worse, is that it's always very difficult to convince management types who are convinced that your project's on schedule to pay down technical debt. And that is actually what I think we're doing here.
Martin, could you clarify which way you see it as technical debt?
I think the callbacks are technical debt, and right. The error stuff that you described. That's not very well, but I believe there's technical debt there, and this is spec technical debt. To be fair, and as spec writers, that we fall to the bottom of the pile. What concerns me more is the API usability stuff. In the pecking order of things, users, web developers, spec writers come last.
Right, so I think you're saying that API usability is a win with promises. That's how I read what you're saying.
Sure. It's not a big one, but it's there.
And when you say spec writers, there's also the readers of specs, I guess. So. Sorry.
So any more comments or questions? So there was one item on the agenda.
I didn't put myself on the queue here, but I do have one question, which is last time we discussed promises, there were concerns about whether using them or not using them would slow us down in last call as this went to other parts of the W3C and things like that. Does anybody have any comments or inputs on that? Because that is also, I mean, I'm on the done as a feature sort of page, but it's less clear to me what the pros and cons of which path is fastest to me. So I'm just interested if anyone has input on that part of it.
Dom in the queue. So I think it's fairly clear that the tag will send a comment on this if we don't go to promises saying we should. I think we would also be likely in a position to argue that we have so much current deployment that this is what we think is the best compromise. I guess from a purely process point of view, my guess is that going with promise would probably be smoother. But I think at the end of the day, we should make our decision not based on what will make our life easier, but what will make the web the best. So.
I saw there was one question on IRC from Jerry here about event targets. Sorry, I misunderstood. If we have event targets, there's no reason why you can't fire an event and fulfill a promise. So. There's some APIs where I think both would make sense. I think one was an image capture where you can have changes to the configuration that was asynchronous. I may misremember, but that at the same time, you can have external reasons for changes. So it would make total sense, I think, to support both list and event handler API for someone to listen to any kind of changes, including external changes. But separately from that, someone probably would also want to know when their changes completed. So in that case, I would argue you would have both. So, but that's a rare case. I think, again, there are no event targets affected in this current spec that I know.
Okay, thanks. I see no one on the queue. We had one item for the chairs to summarize the schedule impact of doing this, but I think it has been said already. I mean, if everything would go really, really smooth, it would be a minor impact, but there could be a lot of things hiding in the details that would impact, and it's impossible to know right now. So with that, I think we are at the decision tree. So Harald, your turn.
Okay, so I tried to write up what decisions do we have to take in such a way that we could there are some decisions like what kind of backwards compatibility do we want? We don't have to discuss that if we can't get there from here. So I tried to, it turned into five levels of question. So the first level is, do we want a get user media like function that returns a promise? And my feeling is that a lot of people have argued in favor of that, not much against it. And the second level is, if we want this to be added in a version we send out for last call, again, my feeling is that we are still sharply divided here. Unfortunately, this is a yes-no decision, which often turns adversarial. And the level three is, do we want to have backwards compatibility in the spec so that we can get this media code? And then if we discuss that, if we conclude that that we need it, we can discuss what shape of it. And then we can say, do we think that the current pull request is the right change to the document if we want it, if we get that far? Do you understand the idea of the decision tree? I suggest that a proposal to the group is that we have a yes on question one. We do want promises eventually. Does anyone want to say that they don't agree with that? Okay, we require a consensus that we have the group agrees that we want promises eventually. And then we have level two. Do we want to have promises in the version we send out for last call? And I have heard so far, I've heard Justin and Ecker speaking out strongly against it. I have heard Anna and Jim and Janiva speaking
very strongly for it. So does anyone want to say that they have changed their opinion?
Just for context, Carol.
We're not at the moment trying to make a formal vote. We're trying to see if there's consensus.
Just for my benefit, Harold, what's the time frame you're talking about for last call?
I mean, we were aiming for September. We're now aiming for October.
Right. Okay. That changes things a little bit, in my opinion. But I won't say much more.
I mean, this is the first last call. I'm advised by people who have done last calls in the WTC that expecting to have no changes after the first last call is believing in fairy tales. But we need to hope for that. We need to feel that we can send this out for a last call. And so that was Giri on the speaker queue?
Yeah, I know you're trying to do a call for consensus, but one of the things that's been frustrating from my perspective is seeing all the back and forth on the mailing list from people who are members of the same organization. Can we not get a collective view from each organization? That's exactly why I put in the not my personal opinion, but the opinion of my organization that I represent. I've seen some people. I've seen some people from Mozilla claim it's a development risk. I've seen some people from Mozilla claim it's not. It's already available in the nightly builds. As an example. So. Otherwise, I think this consensus call is going to be kind of messy and not very meaningful.
No, Fluffy?
I think one of the things that makes it hard for me to understand about which way I would go on this would be what's going to happen. What would happen I'll just say hypothetically, the 1.1 spec we decided to move to promises, okay, some future spec. Would that deprecate the callback method in the spec, even though browsers might do it in a backwards compatible way, of course, or would the spec have two ways of doing it? Because I think one of the things that I've never been really very keen on is the spec having to document two different ways of doing it. That seems like, back to Dom's point of making the web a better place, that always causes problems. They never line up exactly right. So I think I'd like a little bit of clarification of which direction people are thinking to go on that if we did this later. I think it's one of the questions.
Well, if no one's going to answer that, it seems clear to me that if we don't get better callback APIs now, we're stuck with them in the spec. And since we all agreed we want to go to promises, I assume that